Hear that? It's the sound of you catching up on all the latest and greatest fintech news, trends, and updates thanks to Streetworthy, Yield Street's bi-weekly newsletter. Stay in the know with CEO Milind Mahiri as he takes a closer look at what's happening in the fintech space, then breaks down what each story could mean for investors like you. Give your portfolio the edge it deserves and subscribe to Streetworthy on LinkedIn today.
Welcome to The Yield, the official podcast of Yield Street. Every week, we bring you the latest market insights across our asset classes and products from subject matter experts. Our aim is to break the outdated mold of investing and help you add financial fuel to your ambitions through innovative investing products and strategies typically unavailable to most investors. Realize your next level with The Yield. Subscribe to this podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, and Stitcher. The views you are about to hear do not necessarily reflect the views of Yield Street. This podcast is intended to be strictly informational and is not intended to be and should not be construed as a research report, investment advice, or the offer or sale of securities or any investment product. Now, let's get into the show.
Alrighty, welcome everybody. Thanks so much for taking the time out of your day to join us and help us discuss the important role of private business credit within the American economy at the moment. The plan today is to dive deeper into private business credit and why it is an essential line of finance for growing businesses in the current climate. The structure of today's conversation will be super candid and forum-like, so we really encourage you to drop your questions into the Q&A box of your Zoom meeting. I'll do my best to make sure your questions are answered as we go, but if we do miss anything, I'll get back to you via email with the necessary answers. In case we haven't met before, my name is Bella Godfrey and I am an investor relations associate here at Yield Street. I'm fortunate enough to work alongside three powerhouse women and together we look after all the members on the Yield Street platform. It's such a pleasure to host this webinar today and I'm hoping you'll reach out to the team and I at any point with any questions. Following this chat, you can email us at investments@yieldstreet.com. Be sure to visit the Yield Street website, yieldstreet.com, to learn about more of our open offerings and sign up to receive the latest updates on our webinars and our opinion pieces on the market and things happening around us. We also have an app. You can download it from the Google Play or the Apple Play Store, our Apple App Store. And finally, before we begin, if you are joining us as an originator today, be sure to click on the Raise Capital page on our website or reach out to our originations team at originations@yieldstreet.com. Okay, so I'm incredibly lucky to work alongside our guests every day. So I'm thrilled to be able to introduce you all to Barbara Anderson and Larry Curran. For those of you that haven't been able to attend one of Barbara or Larry's previous webinars, Barbara is the head of underwriting with Yield Street's Private Business Credit Group and has been with the company for 5 months now. Before Yield Street, Barbara had an extensive career in commercial banking, responsible for originating, underwriting and managing senior secured loans to finance companies, retailers and factories managing billions of dollars. Larry is the managing director of our newly formed private business credit team and comes to Yield Street with 25 years of experience. Larry was most recently the founder of I2B Capital and co-founder of Vion Receivable Investments. His focus was in developing receivable-based investments for institutional investors. Larry and Barbara have actually been a team together for the past 12 years, joining forces at Vion, I2B Capital, and now Yield Street Private Business Credit. Barbara and Larry, thanks so much for coming on today. Okay, so I think the best place to start this conversation is by acknowledging that private business credit is our newest vertical on Yield Street. So I think for the sake of new Yield Street members or those members on the platform that haven't previously invested in the asset class, Larry, I thought it could be really useful to run us through what private business credit is and why the demand and the need for private business credit is more than ever before.
Great. Well, thank you, Bella. And thanks, everyone, for tuning in today to spend some time prior to Thanksgiving week with us. And part of, you know, as you might imagine, as commercial lenders in this marketplace, it certainly is not mapped out in any great detail. There's so many things happening today. What we wanted to point out to folks is that today we find ourselves in a unique position because private business credit is so new. First of all, we don't have the issues of lending into the crisis. In other words, we didn't have outstanding loans in our book that came into this that would be taking our time right now trying to work with other borrowers and kind of managing workouts and working with folks to get through this tough time during COVID. So we had a unique platform to launch from where we could come into businesses with the current facts the way they are, where the business is in the middle of the cycle with COVID in full bloom, whatever you want to say. And that gave us the opportunity to look at a business from today. And unlike our brethren and finance companies and our bank partners that are already in these companies, many of them have lent up, and in many cases we'll find, as one of the deals we're going to talk about later, there is a bank in there and they've got a $10, $20, $30 million line of credit, and that credit is currently maxed out. And the bank, because of other non-related issues, may not have the capacity to increase that loan. So because of that dislocation, it creates an excellent opportunity for us to bring our investor group in and help continue the capitalization of the growth of the business that otherwise has been bankable. And so because of the dislocation that's been created, it's given private business credit an opportunity to come in and find companies that are growing despite what's going on, all facts, political and otherwise, with the pandemic. And we have found, and what Barbara and I are constantly seeking with our team here at PBC, are companies that are growing right now, that have infrastructure and typically financing where there's a bank already involved and the company needs to continue to expand. So there's an opportunity to grow and put us in a position to get kind of outsized returns because of the dislocation, but not necessarily a distress situation. And that's really kind of the basis of where we look to move from a platform on our companies as we look to kind of bring them into our process. We want to make sure that they're growing right now. They almost uniformly have a bank that's already in there. The bank is unable at this time to extend additional credit. So we come in, and that's kind of our jump off point from that standpoint. The other thing that we want to talk about just quickly is because the economy goes one way or another, there's always somebody that needs to borrow money. Whether they're qualified or not qualified is part of what Barbara and I's job are, is that we're constantly triaging the companies out that can't and don't have all the elements that we're looking for in today's fact pattern. And because we're new and we have this platform, it puts us into a position where as we bring new deals out to our platform, we're looking at what are the needs of our borrowers and the businesses that are growing, and what are the yield requirements that we need to be in balance with for our investors. So what we found out in very short order here at our time at Yield Street is that we're kind of finding our groove, so to speak, where we are getting the right yield perspective and the right type of investment with the right tenor that we can provide the right kind of security and infrastructure for our investors. And we're getting the distributed site here at Yield Street is being distributed because we're meeting the needs of our clients' need for yield and term, and we're meeting the needs of our growing businesses. And that creates a win-win opportunity for both of us to grow here together on the Yield Street platform.
Yeah, definitely. I know at work, our motto is helping investors to realize their next level. And what I do love about the private business credit vertical is that we're also helping American businesses realize their next level. So we get to experience that feel-good side of things from both sides of the transaction. And Larry, you mentioned before that even though the economy isn't in an uncertain spot heading into 2021, we still have been able to identify businesses to work with. Barbara, I'd love to learn more about why we feel comfortable participating in supply chain financing programs at the moment.
Sure, Bella. We've launched two supply chain financing opportunities on the site so far this year. One was for a consumer products company, and our most recent offering a few weeks ago was for a distributor of containerboard and lumber. In both cases, these companies were growing, and that's what actually spurred the need for additional financing through the supply chain offering that we have with our partner, Raystone Capital. if you could put the slide up on supply chain finance, I just wanted to give you a little refresher on what supply chain finance is. In this case, let's take the containerboard company by way of example. They approve invoices for their suppliers that they agree to pay in full on a date certain. We then acquire those receivables from the suppliers, and we hold those receivables to the maturity date. What that does for the supply chain is that the suppliers get paid immediately, which is great for them. They can go produce more containerboard. And our customer, the distributor, gets additional time to pay for those invoices. In the case of our containerboard company, 120 days. That gives them time to sell the containerboard and get repaid by their customers. Now, what we liked in particular about the supply chain transactions that we completed this year is, first and foremost, they were growing companies through the COVID pandemic. Also, their capital structure made sense. And I think that that's an important aspect of every transaction we look at, is to understand the underlying financing and the capital structure. So, for example, in the case of the containerboard company, they have a long-standing banking relationship in the nine-figure level. They also have a borrowing base, fully followed, formula-driven transaction with financial covenants that make sense, that enable the business to run successfully going forward. And I think that's important to keep in mind. Also, the company has procured credit insurance. Because they sell their products all over the world, they have a credit insurance policy on all of their receivables that ensures payment in the event the underlying customers don't pay. And that's a critical element of our analysis of the capital structure of the company, is their ability to pay going forward. And that definitely is a key critical aspect of our analysis. So when we do our due diligence and when we evaluate these transactions, we're looking at a lot of different aspects before we feel comfortable, you know, bringing that transaction to market. So we hope that in the future, we'll have more opportunities to bring some interesting supply chain finance transactions to our investors for their consideration.
Yeah, definitely. And to comment on the success of supply chain financing too, it's clear that investors were confident and comfortable with the underlying borrower, and they liked the duration and the yield, because that deal did sell out quite quickly. And as you sort of hinted at, Barbara, we will, toward the end of our chat today, look at what might be to come for private business credit as we look forward for the next couple of months. But I think now we've discussed one area of the private business credit industry that we operate in, being supply chain finance, I'd like to pivot and ask Larry to comment on the other areas that we lend. And I think we can use our motorcycle loan portfolio one as a good example of the different types of transactions that exist within this vertical.
Yeah, so great segue there, Bella. Thank you. Into our consumer outlook. And for any of you that have been kind of listening to the news, the financial news over the past week, the consumer in America has really outpaced what we might think they were doing during the COVID time. We've seen increase in savings amount, and even the stimulus that went out, we saw a much higher savings rate, and people actually paid their bills and actually became lower debt to income ratios. So all things that make an opportunity for consumer opportunities viable if we have the right partner. So with our motorcycle loan portfolio one, it wasn't so much that I wanted to be in motorcycles in general, but we wanted to find a motorcycle originator of loans that was growing, could work with our cost of capital, and had, you know, significant track record, and preferably if there was a bank involved where we knew we had a fully followed asset-based lending mechanism in there that we would kind of be able to kind of step in and help the growth in that company. So in this particular deal, we targeted, this is a fully amortizing transaction, which is different than our supply chain and some of our other commercial deals that might be just interest only. So each month, our investors get a, you know, principal reduction that's paid from the actual payments from the motorcycles themselves. And in this particular case, we had a portfolio that was $35 million that was owned by the originator, had banks that had financed up that $35 million, but they couldn't grow anymore, and they had continued demand. So we brought the opportunity to take a piece of that book out, leave the balance with the bank and the originator, and our capital was used to actually pay down that senior line of credit, so that the company continued to lend and basically grow the portfolio by another $13 million. We ended up with a $13 million portfolio here that consists mainly of Harley-Davidson motorcycles, Suzukis, and Kawasakis. We had mostly kind of newer models there. We do have a small percentage of new bikes, about 10 or 15%. But the key for our investors is that our portfolio mirrors what is left at the originator. So how much of every type of bike, age of the bike, the seasonings of the bike, the interest rate, the states where they're located. We have a mirrored image of what they kept. They're just financed by the bank, and here we're financed by our investors. So definitely we like that kind of a concept of where we're at. As far as the organization itself, it's been in the motorcycle business exclusively since 2015, but our operator's been in the lending business, auto and otherwise, for over 20 years, and they moved exclusively to motorcycles because in their own cohort, their motorcycle loans outperformed their auto loans, and they moved exclusively in 2015 into this area. To date, they've done over 7,000 loans with over $65 million lent to date. They have a dealer network with over 560 dealers that they work with in 29 states. I will tell you that they do have a little concentration in the Sunshine States, where motorcycles, Arizona, California, and Florida. And we do have a large percentage of the portfolio in those states because they have all year riding seasons. And then what we found is when just before COVID and the Locked Act happened, this group was looking for a $50 to $75 million loan. They wanted to pay off the $35 million and have $20 million of open-to-buy credit to grow the book to $70 million and beyond. When COVID hit, that obviously became a little bit more difficult. And for us being brand new here at Yield Street, going after a $75 million trade out of the get-go was a little large as we proved our concept. So we came in with the premise of why don't we, in fact, acquire a piece of the portfolio, free up that capital to enable the group to continue going on and lending. So we are just finishing our second full month in the portfolio. We'll have statistics posted, I think, on the update on the site. But the good news is that we've, you know, collected over $1 million in our first 2 months. We've been able to pay down a significant portion of the principal. And as we go forward in this time, we're very excited because this gives a high income potential to our investors that are seeking, you know, current income and want to recycle their principal in other deals that can continue to compound their returns.
Perfect. Thanks, Larry. And Barbara, you actually underwrote this loan. And I know Larry sort of touched at the high level why we really like it. But I think it would be useful if we jump into some a bit more of the granular details and when this transaction first came across your desk, what made you comfortable with it and like it?
Sure. You know, first and foremost, I think we need to keep in mind that in this particular transaction, the underlying consumer loans are secured. So we have collateral backing each and every loan. In addition to that, we looked at a seasoned portfolio of loans, and we looked for 12 months on average of seasoning. Now, why did we do that? We found in our due diligence that almost half of the losses incurred on the portfolio occur in the first 12 months. And I think a lot of that has to do with, you know, the buyer's remorse effect. I can't really afford it. I didn't really use it. And they turn the bike in. And I think that's why you have a little bit higher propensity for loss when you go to sell that bike. And that you know, is combined with the fact that a lot of equity has not been built up in that asset yet because it's fairly early in its payment history. So we looked in this particular portfolio for 12 months on average seasoning to get past that period of time. We also, as Larry mentioned, randomly selected the portfolio so that it mirrors from a geographical point of view, a type of bike, new and used, you know, payment methods, et cetera. We made sure that it mirrors the whole portfolio. But in doing that, you know, no system is perfect. So we instituted a 90-day buyback for any loans that default during the first 90 days post-closing to clean up any after effects that we might have in the random selection. So to keep the portfolio performing, the portfolio was fully performing out of the gate, and we wanted to maintain that through the first 90 days of the transaction. So we instituted a buyback provision, which I think is very, very powerful. Also, the other thing that we look at when we underwrite the transactions is the alignment of interests with our operator. So in this particular case, our operator is actually doing the day-to-day servicing. They're processing all the payments. They're repossessing any foreclosures. They're liquidating the collateral. They're full, you know, soup to nuts servicing operation. And we wanted to make sure that our interests were aligned with their interests. And we instituted a performance metric in our transactions so that if delinquencies or defaults rise to levels that are above expected, their servicing fee for that month will be subordinated to the back of the loan. So they need to earn their servicing fee each month by a performance standard that we expect them to meet. So that's another powerful structuring tool that we used in this particular transaction. And then the last thing that I'll say, and again, Larry mentioned this a little bit, is that our operator had a long track record in the space. And that goes a long way. You know, for us, you know, bad things can happen to good people, but, you know, in general, history repeats itself. And if performance has been solid and stable and the underwriting policies and procedures are time tested, we like those opportunities where we have a track record to evaluate before we make our own investments. And we rely pretty heavily on that part of the underwriting as well.
So not only is the way the loan is structured very important, but the various protections that we have in place also make it critical for us to judge whether or not we're comfortable with the opportunity. I think, though, it's like important to touch on that we wouldn't just offer, you know, financing to any company in any industry, though. It's, you know, we've got to be also comfortable with the industry itself. Larry, can you speak to why we like certain areas of the economy over others and what made you comfortable with motorcycles in this instance? And do you think any market conditions over the coming months could impact this deal as, you know, it works towards maturity?
Great. So perhaps in full disclosure, I'm a motorcycle rider myself. So as an enthusiast, or as many motorcycle riders call their motorcycle, it's their therapist. And that's one of the things that I think folks that haven't ridden a motorcycle before don't understand the relationship that we have with motorcycles. It's a very different than a car. And some people think, well, then, you know, why wouldn't that be the first thing to go? And it's interesting. We often hear jokes that, you know, your partner might be the first to go if you fought over the motorcycle. And I can't say that I haven't had a few of those discussions myself, but she is still here with me, despite the fact that that I continue to ride. But what I want everybody to understand is that motorcycling is like a way of life, and it's kind of a concept that people spend an inordinate amount of their time, their energy, and their money around. Because when you get on your bike, you're normally not going to just a place. You're trying to think about, where am I going on an adventure today? And the interesting thing is that right now with COVID in place, restrictions, you don't want to travel with people, around people. A motorcycle inherently is the best social distancing available to us. And so there's actually been an enormous increase in demand for outside activities. The motorsport industry as a whole, and in fact, according to CycleWorld, they call it the pandemic paradox, where, you know, people are buying what I would call 2-, 3-, and 4-wheeled outdoor RVs, motorcycles, anything that can get themselves, their families out in the open. And that's why we've seen actually the strongest sales numbers in the power sports industry in years during COVID. So that was one of the things that we really liked about the space, is that there's this strange thing where people are buying things that inherently put them outdoors. And oddly enough, and actually, you know, what I would say, technically speaking, riding a motorcycle is very medicinal, and it's been proven that just the heightening of your senses when you're riding, going to a destination of choice, and depending on the type of motorcycle you have, you can kind of go anywhere. For me, I have a dual sport, so my motorcycle will take me any place on the street, on the dirt, in the mountains. And when you get on a ride, you think, I'm going to go off and be by myself, away from people, and really what adventure and where do I want to go? And right now we're having a great demand for that particular experience. And that's why the motorcycle industry is actually growing during COVID. And as we talked about at the beginning of this, we look for businesses that are growing, have a reason to be growing, and have a continuation opportunity to continue to grow as the pandemic continues. And that's why we like being in the motorcycle space.
So it's evident that the businesses that we're working with at the moment, I don't want to say benefiting from the pandemic, but the conditions that the pandemic is creating is allowing their businesses to grow. We actually had a question from an investor, which will also allow me to segue nicely into the next area of our conversation, which is the pipeline. We get so many questions about what we have coming up, and it's always hard for us to give certain answers because the industry is so fluid, and we can think that a loan's going to close and then it won't, or we don't expect something to close and then it will. So it can be a little bit fast-paced behind the scenes in comparison to what investors see. But the investor question that we had today was, we seem to be benefiting and taking advantage of the dislocation in the market at the moment. Hopefully, one day soon, if this vaccine is as close as we think it is, when the market does start to recover and there's less dislocation, do you think that we'll still be able to find opportunity, Barbara, in the private business credit vertical in a performing market? And I guess once we've looked at a recovering economy and the need for PBC in a recovering economy, what you are looking at on your desk at the moment, and sort of if you can give us a glimpse into our pipeline over the next couple of months, I think that would be great.
Nothing so constant as change. You know, our business does well when times are not so good, as well as when times are really good, because change is really a catalyst to our borrowers needing additional capital to fuel their growth. So for me, right now, there are a few segments that we're looking at. One in particular is infrastructure. We have a few transactions that are part of the road building, let's say road building, infrastructure rehabilitation industry that we think is interesting, because we think the government is going to be putting a lot of money, the states and the federal government, into roads, bridges, tunnels, and other infrastructure products. And of course, you know, we'll be focused on the companies that are involved in those, you know, longer term projects, which are funneling or supporting their growth going forward. Another interesting example that I'll give you on the supply chain side, actually, we turned down a transaction for men's and women's apparel, primarily because, you know, we weren't confident that the upcoming holiday shopping season was going to be successful, in particular for store-based retailers. But one area that is interesting to us is children's apparel. because even though children may not be going to school right at the moment, they do grow. Pandemic or no pandemic, kids always need new clothes. And those are the kinds of things that we focus on and look at, those niche-y, you know, kind of businesses within categories that make sense at the time. So those are a couple of examples of transactions that you might be seeing from us coming down the pike.
Thanks, Barbara. That's very insightful. I am now getting to the point of the conversation where we do have to think about wrapping it up. As always, it's been an absolute pleasure and incredibly informative to have this chat with you both today. And I hope those on the call found the conversation equally as informative. And it's now clear why we see value in the private business credit vertical, the types of companies that we look to work with, and within the certain industries that we choose to. We've got a couple of more investor questions that have come through, and I've saved some time for us to answer them. Larry or Barbara, I'll throw this one out to either of you. The question is, how does the return of income, an internal rate of return, investing in motorcycle loan or any other loan on Yield Street for that matter, compare against other investment options such as a multifamily syndication deal that have a 36-month investment period? So I suppose that it's asking you, which is always a little bit hard to compare yield and risk over asset classes, but I believe the investor's wanting to know how the return of a private business credit deal looks against a longer multifamily development real estate transaction. Larry, perhaps if you want to take that one.
Great question. And really, the concept here at Yield Street is that virtually most everything we do with all of our verticals creates cash flow, income. And so when we look at both aggregately across our other verticals, which include commercial real estate, and you might see a real estate offering, so that's really a compliment for yourself. But for, you know, if I were just take myself as an example, I have investments in short-term, mid-term, and long-term across the Yield Street site that provide different timing and maturities of the income. And that's really what our overall concept behind supply chain, real estate, art, et cetera, is to create a plan that diversifies you across the different asset classes but meets the income, whether you're, you know, complementing retirement, you know, using the money to support a kid in college, as I am. It really comes out to your needs and your overall portfolio. But our goal here is to help people think about creating portfolio that actually has cross sections of each so that you're not exposed to a particular or singular industry, but you have different time and tenor. As we mentioned early, the last supply chain deal we did was 120 days. The previous one was 180 days. This consumer loan deal that we're talking about with motorcycles is 3 years fully amortizing. And so that gives you different time and periods when you're going to be receiving the income, the type of income, and whether you need your principal recycled or not is really a decision that you have to make on yourself. But certainly our goal is to create a diversified portfolio and a place where you can come back over and over again. So our supply chain will become more and more programmatic. So both with our counterparties and with our originator, you'll get to see those. And if you're investing every 120 days, you'll have more capital to invest 120 days from now. And we'll have another hopeful program that's available for you to think about recycling in that trade at that point. Barbara, did you have any thought?
No, I think, Larry, I think that was well said. You know, part of what we're trying to do here is provide different alternatives. And in the motorcycle deal in particular, it was fully amortizing. In the case of the supply chain finance transactions, they're very short term. So they're a little bit different in that regard from some of the other real estate and art transactions that we have up on the site.
And Barbara, we've worked with Raystone Capital now twice with both of our supply chain financing programs, different borrowers behind both of the transactions, but same originator. We've had a question come in from an investor. Our Yield Street investors are always hungry to maximize yield, and they would like to know whether there's going to be opportunity in the future for Yield Street to directly originate these programs, these like supply chain financing programs, without using a third party, so we can potentially boost returns even more?
You know, Raystone Capital is a fintech platform that is over $2 billion in size. And while, you know, supply chain sounds, you know, simple on the outside, it's fairly complex internally because you're dealing with multiple suppliers for multiple customers paying at different times across the spectrum. And it is a very technology-enabled platform that Raystone has. We're not quite there yet. What I can tell you is that we're always looking for new originator opportunities. And if there's a chance to work with others that have different levels of expertise, perhaps more in the trade finance realm, we'd be looking to do that. But I think it will take us a little while before we'd be able to replicate the Raystone system right now.
If I could just add to that, the other things we like about Raystone is in supply chain financing, one, of course, is that they're invested themselves. They're taking the risk right alongside us. And if any of you hadn't seen our previous webinar, our CEO at Raystone used to run Citibank's supply chain finance program and established, I want to say, Morgan Stanley's supply chain finance program as well. So we have super enabled, highly qualified people that have track record that is immense. They're putting their own capital alongside us in the same participation that we're in. And then as Barbara mentioned, their automation, they're actually integrated in some of the largest ERP solutions in the country. And when somebody needs to finance a receivable or trade, work with their trade payables, they're actually integrated into the system where you can kind of click to finance here and it will come through, and that's where they source their opportunities. And then finally, not to mention that they're backed by the largest wealth manager in the world. So we've got a great partner that allows us to originate an enormity. And just so everybody understands, in our supply chain financing one participation, just to give you an example, they've already cycled since the inception of the program with the counterparty over $173 million to date. And they're paying and advancing every week as we go forward. So we really look on partner sides, we're doing that. But also keep in mind, Barbara and I will be originating deals directly to your point, where we can participate in higher yields and not be sharing those with other folks, because we do get the direct relationship, which is part of our mantra as well. So we'll be looking to do both.
Yeah, I think it's certainly important to emphasize the benefit of and the advantage of an experienced originator in the field and how that can act as a risk mitigant. And just in my opinion, having as much experience behind the transaction as possible is obviously going to yield a more positive outcome than perhaps otherwise. So, and I will also comment, I liked how you mentioned, Barbara, that Raystone have skin in the game, and all the deals on Yield Street are pre-funded too. So Yield Street puts up the capital first to close the loan, to secure the loan, that so then we can eventually offer it to investors. And I think that us putting Yield Street putting money behind the deal, and then also the originator, I think it vouches for the quality of the deal and our level of comfort too. And you know, if certainly if we and Raystone weren't comfortable with these deals, we wouldn't be putting our money up, and you know, no way would we expect investors to consider investing their money. So I think that does speak to the quality of the transactions and the platform as well. But we have unfortunately run out of time today, so I am going to wrap things up. I'd like to thank everyone for joining us. As I mentioned at the start of the call, please visit yieldstreet.com to learn more about our open offerings and come realize your next level with us. And a good point to leave you all on, we were discussing about origination of new deals. So if you are an originator, be sure to click through to the Raise Capital page or reach out to our originations team at originations@yieldstreet.com. Thanks so much, everybody. I believe this is our last webinar before the holidays, so I hope everyone has a happy and safe Thanksgiving, and stay tuned as we release more content after the break. Thanks again.
Thank you for listening to this week's episode of The Yield. For the latest updates on the alternative investing space, go to yieldstreet.com. Be sure to subscribe to this podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, and Stitcher. If you enjoyed the show, feel free to leave a review on Apple Podcasts, as this will help other investors like yourself find our show. If you have any questions, please visit us at YieldStreet.com. Thanks again for listening, and see you next week. The Yield Street podcast you just heard only reflects the opinions of the host, who is an associated person of Yield Street, and does not necessarily reflect the views of Yield Street or any of its affiliates or other associates. The podcast is for informational purposes only and is not intended to be and should not be construed as a recommendation to buy or sell any security, and is not an offer or sale of any securities or investment product. The podcast is also not a research report and is not intended to be and should not be construed as investment advice.
Support for this podcast comes from Yield Street. Trying to time the stock market can lead to regret. At Yield Street, our alternative investments are designed to create predictable secondary income streams, providing you with tools to help put your money to work immediately. These investments in asset classes like art, real estate, and legal finance typically have low correlation with the stock market and target annual yields up to 7-10%. Welcome to the next generation of investing. Welcome to Yield Street. Sign up today at YieldStreet.com.